Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals this afternoon. We have one case on our 3 o'clock docket, and it is yours. So if you all are ready, we will have the clerk call the first case, and we will get started.
The court will now call Marisha Olt versus the State of Texas. May it please the court, Mr. Stephen Moore will argue for the appellant. Ms. Catherine Lush will argue for the state.
Mr. Moore.
May it please the court.
Counsel. First of all, thank you for this opportunity. In light of the time constraints, I'm going to concentrate primarily on the second point and the fourth point of the brief of the appellant, and in particular related to two aspects of them that touch on each other, as the state's response brief has drawn the court's attention to that. The first is that during the course of the testimony in this case, it was a five-day trial, there was some testimony provided over objection with regards to an extraneous offense that occurred in the city of Fort Worth some 24 hours or more prior to the actual offense for which Marisha Olt was actually tried on. And in that, I think it is clear from both briefs and also from the statement of facts that Ms. Olfs had no actual involvement in that extraneous offense. The brief of the state admits that that they had no evidence that she actually was involved in that offense, though other co-defendants in the case were or may have been involved in that offense. The basis of our argument on this is simply that in order for an extraneous offense, if it is going to be admissible, it should always be hinged on whether or not the person who's on trial actually participated in that extraneous offense, which in this case, I think it's clear, Ms. Olfs did not participate in the offense. Additionally, it was not part of any res geste of this offense. It wasn't part of a planning procedure or part of any part that went into the actual offense for which she was tried. There was no evidence to show that she had knowledge that that offense was occurring at the time that it was occurring, or that she had participated in any way whatsoever in the planning or the execution of that particular offense. The factual situation was that the co-defendants who were co-defendants with her in this case had actually engaged in another robbery with some similarities in that they targeted a taxi cab driver, but that she had no knowledge whatsoever of what had occurred there prior to that, had no part of planning that offense, and was not a party in any way. Our argument is simply, and again, we would address the court to the brief, and the error that we have here is that, well, the state says this would not have had any impact. Obviously, they thought it was going to have enough impact to argue before the court that it should be admissible. They did raise it. They raised it in their closing argument. They also raised it as part of their brief here in the fourth point of saying that it led to their need for a conspiracy as a part of the instruction to the jury and the jury charge.
There's some testimony that she knew about the Fort Worth offense, perhaps from one of the jail inmates that she told that she knew about it and that she had been involved in the planning of it?
No, she admitted that she knew about it prior to the second offense. She knew it had happened prior to it, but she had not been any part of the planning of it. And I think even the investigators admitted on the stand that they knew that she had not been involved in it at all. They had another suspect. They originally thought it was her. They had another female involved in that case, but that case, it was not Ms. Olfs. And they were aware of that, and during the course of the trial, it became clear that she was not part of the planning at all. They admitted she was no part of that. Now, she had, and I believe what's being drawn to your attention there is that she had had a conversation, allegedly, with another inmate while she was at the county jail, where apparently, according to the testimony, she had told that person that she knew that that prior case had occurred before the second case had occurred, but not that she knew about it before that first case had occurred, or that she had any part in any type of criminal responsibility for that. I think it's clear that she had no criminal responsibility for anything that happened here in Tarrant County on that earlier case, and that she did not, it was not part of res geste of the current case, and it was not part of any type of planning or anything of that type that she was involved in.
Would it not be relevant to her state of mind or her plan that this was a, here what it says is that she told this inmate that the Fort Worth robbery was a kind of practice for the next. Wouldn't that be relevant to her state of mind in assisting them planning the one that she was on trial for?
It's still an extraneous offense because she didn't actually plan in that. I mean, I think she was referring to that the persons that she was involved as co-defendants had actually maybe done that as a kind of practice for the second offense. But the first offense was not something she participated in any way. And this goes to the actual, again, this is related to some degree to our fourth point of error, is that at the end of the trial and the jury charge, and this is something they're arguing conspiracy. And in fact, maybe she'd been indicted on conspiracy, and they were trying a conspiracy case, that would be a different situation. But she was not indicted on conspiracy. They are now saying on point four that they should have the right to bring up the word conspiracy and include it in the charge to the jury, even though it was not charged in the indictment, and she was not indicted on that charge, simply because they're going to tell the court that conspiracy and the law of parties are exactly identical.
Wouldn't it out of the statute on the law of parties?
The conspiracy actually has its own separate definition, which was included in this jury charge, but not law of parties has a definition also, and the law of parties was not a definition that was included and was not charged to the jury as to the law of parties. And I understand that they don't have to indict on the law of parties, but but conspiracy is a separate criminal offense and has to be indicted. You can't just come back later on and say, well, that's not really, it doesn't really have to be formally charged because we'll just call it law of parties now. They called it conspiracy throughout the jury charge. They instructed the jury on conspiracy and gave them a definition of conspiracy, not of the law of parties. And the two are related in a sense because they're saying now that their basis for why this was relevant to this case and admissible to this case to talk about this prior offense, which she had nothing to do with, is because it was part of their conspiracy case. However, she's not indicted for conspiracy, and we would argue under point four that they were not entitled to a jury charge charging the jury to find her guilty of conspiracy because she had not been before a grand jury on that particular offense. And in specifically in that relation to that case, I would draw the court's attention to the cases directly on point. Now, one of them I would concede is more in a state of being dicta, in that case was one where they found the person was not entitled to reversal because it had not been properly objected to, but the court basically said in this would have been in the Woodard case, which is cited in our brief at 322 Southwest 3rd 648. That is a Court of Criminal Appeals case from 2010. In that case, where there was an unobjected to jury charge, they still said that the appellant would be entitled to a reversal of his conviction of that offense if he had properly objected to it. In this case, trial counsel did properly object to it. There's quite a bit of record with regards to the jury charge conference and the objections there that were ultimately overruled and allowed in that conspiracy charge, even though it had not been indicted on that. And again, going back, I understand that they're going to say that that's the relevance of this prior offense, but again, anytime there's an extraneous offense, one of the things a person would have to have any consideration of that prior offense would have to show that at least the person who is being on trial now would have been criminally responsible in some way for things that happened in that. And there was no evidence whatsoever presented that Ms. Ulfs had any knowledge that that offense was going on until after it had actually occurred. So, well, their argument is that it should have relevance. Their relevance would be simply tied to an idea of conspiracy, saying she knew what kind of people these people were and shouldn't have engaged in any type of conduct.
But it really wasn't an extraneous offense. It wasn't an extraneous offense as to her.
it should never have been admitted into evidence as an extraneous offense as to her, because it wasn't her offense.
It wasn't admitted as an extraneous. I mean, if we take your argument to its logical conclusion, if she didn't know anything about it, she wasn't implicated in it, she wasn't involved in it in any way, it wasn't an extraneous offense as to her.
I would agree, but they were trying to show this for the purpose of basically showing her propensity to be involved perhaps with people who would commit that type of offense, to link her to the actions of other persons in order to unfairly prejudice the jury. And in that sense, that's why they put it in there. That's our position, that they allowed this to go before the jury simply to show that the actions of her co-defendants were such that it should influence how the jury found on her actions. And that is where, again, they knew she wasn't involved in that crime. They knew that the state knew that. Their investigators testified they knew she wasn't involved in that crime at the time. And they were just the prejudicial effect of having her linked as if this was a group of taxicab robberies and she was part of it, I think unfairly prejudiced the defendant in this case. So I would agree that it should not have been admitted at all as an extraneous offense or for any purpose. But once it was admitted, it took on the nature of being tied to her simply because she's tied to the co-defendants. And again, a large part of this has to do with what the actual offense that she's charged with, and the offense that she's charged with is the aggravated robbery. The aggravated robbery is not a conspiracy to commit aggravated robbery. And while there is a law of parties and she could be held responsible for the acts of others, conspiracy is an actual separate offense which would have had to have been indicted in order to be included in the charge to the jury, and in order to have the instruction that was made to the jury that they could find her guilty of the offense if they found that she had conspired with these other persons by the definition that they provided in that jury charge.
I have a question on the harm analysis on that point.
Yes, ma'am.
Because the harm analysis that we typically apply for extraneous offenses, I'm not sure that applies if the argument is that she wasn't even affiliated with the crime or had no criminal responsibility for the offense that you're saying is an extraneous offense.
Well, the state certainly made an effort to show her to be tied to that offense. That's the only reason they raised it. They raised it in order to impact on what the jury was going to consider as her character or the character of the actual acts that occurred, her knowledge with regards to the acts. And they actually, they did do that. They did do it in their closing argument. The state made every effort they possibly could to make that relevant to the jury. And we have to, I think if we're going to look at that harm analysis, we have to look at it from the standpoint of what a jury may have been thinking as they went back to deliberate. And part of what they may have been thinking as they went back to deliberate under this set of facts is they may be thinking about this prior robbery about which she did not have any involvement in, but which had obviously been tied to her through what the state had done. And we can, it's very different to look at it from the standpoint of saying we can isolate those two facts, but I can't say with certainty that the jury was able to isolate those facts from each other, and I believe that may have impacted what they and prejudicially what they did in the case. Thank you.
May it please the court. Counsel. There was evidence that she was involved in the Fort Worth robbery. Specifically, as you noticed, Justice Gabriel, the prison mate said that she had told her she was involved. That evidence is in my brief on page 26. It has the references to the record where that was included. In addition to that testimony, there was also if you look at the text messages, and I don't have the one in front of me right now, but there was one that was discussing, actually the defense introduced it, was discussing the time of the robbery. And in effect, if I remember correctly, the co-defendant, Whitehead, was telling her, I'm down here doing what you told me to do. So we do think it is relevant to rebut her defensive theory that she had nothing to do with this. It shows intent and knowledge.
I have another question about that particular issue.
Yes.
Both of you all seem to agree that this, if you want to call it extraneous offense evidence, was admitted at guilt, innocence, and at punishment?
Yes, I believe.
And so was it basically all the same, or did part of it come in at guilt, innocence, and then part of it at punishment, or is there no meaningful distinction between the portions of the extraneous offense that were offered at guilt, innocence, and those offered at punishment?
You know, Your Honor, I wish I remembered more. I honestly don't remember the distinction between those.
Okay.
As far as the instruction on conspiracy, it was part of the law of parties. It wasn't an independent charge of criminal conspiracy. The law of parties doesn't have to be included in the indictment. And just as an illustration, I've got part of the charge here, the code here, reading from the law of parties as far as the conspiracy part. If in the attempt to carry out a conspiracy to commit one felony, another felony is committed, ... The part of the charge, if an attempt to carry out a conspiracy to commit one felony, another felony is committed, it comes straight from the language under parties.
Did you define conspiracy in the charge? I don't think there's a definition of conspiracy under 702.
It does say conspiracy means an agreement between two or more persons. So it does define conspiracy.
And at least according to Mr. War, there was an objection to that definition.
There was an objection. I'm not sure if it was specifically as to the definition, but it was as to the mention of conspiracy. Yes, Your Honor. And I guess since we didn't cover the other 2 points, I will just ask if there are any questions and then conclude. Thank you.
I'll just clarify 2 points. First of all, I think if the court was to read they do not cite the space in the argument with regards to what was argued here about the text message. But that text message was part of a difficulty in this case because they initially thought that Ms. Ulfs had made that text message and later determined it was another person who had made that text message. And that was not part of that finding with regards to whether or not she had any involvement in it. Also, I think the tense of when things occurred is very important to read from it. The tense of when things occurred, I think everybody, including the investigators who testified, agreed that Ms. Ulfs did not have any part in any meaningful way in the original Fort Worth offense, and that what she may have known later on or may have known between that offense and the second offense do not make her criminally responsible for what happened in that first offense because she didn't know about it ahead of time or prior to that. And the very text that she's talking about go do the things that you want me to do, was a text that in the transcript was not attributed to Ms. Ulfs, but to some other unknown or another person in the Fort Worth case. Finally, with regards to the conspiracy and the definition, I think it's extremely important that the definition that's given in the charge is significantly more broad than what would have been part of the law of parties. It's definitely a different set of circumstances under which a person under that conspiracy and that definition of conspiracy can be found guilty, and that's what gives rise to the harm in this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. War. Thank you, Ms. Luft. We appreciate you driving down from Denton to present your arguments today. They've been helpful to the court. Your case is submitted, and you're free to go about your business, and we will be adjourned.